This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. Support for Reveal comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software, or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/reveal. That's odoo.com/reveal. Odoo. Modern management made simple.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. Every hero has an origin story, a tale that's fraught with drama and heartbreak. It's the fire that tempers their steel and turns them into the hero we all know and love. For Superman, it's the destruction of Krypton.
If he remains here with us, he will die as surely as we will.
For Batman, it's his parents' death.
You ever dance with the devil by the pale moonlight?
For Spider-Man, failing to save his Uncle Ben.
Uncle Ben!
But it's not just heroes. All of us have that pivotal moment in our lives that, as small or as large as it may seem, sets us on a journey. For me, it was in a classroom. As a child, I was struggling with dyslexia and could barely read. I was teased by my classmates and generally felt like I was a big dummy. I'd work every weekend with my aunt, who was a teacher, to help me learn. But the Dick and Jane books they gave me weren't really cutting it. And then one day, my uncle bought me a stack of comic books. And like Superman being found by the Kents, everything changed. I fell in love with stories, with artwork, with reading. I don't think I'd be talking to you today if I hadn't got those comic books. They upped my reading comprehension, activated my imagination, and gave me a love for storytelling. I am, and always will be, a comic book nerd. Which is why my spidey sense started tingling when I heard about a new independent comic book titled Alt Hero.
I've been trailing him for weeks.
The alt in Alt Hero, of course, is a reference to the alt-right, the white nationalist movement.
He could just be another vigilante.
So this is a promotional video for Alt Hero. There's some comic book art of a little white girl cowering in an alley. A large brown-skinned man with a mustache menaces her. Then, a white vigilante appears out of nowhere and knocks the brown-skinned guy out and drops him off at immigration. Yeah.
Cleaning up the streets, one illegal at a time.
The so-called alt-right is moving into comics. And on today's show, we're going to look at that movement and how comic books, toxic fans, and social media have become a part of the culture war. And one of the soldiers in that war...
It's a big step in the culture wars because it's the first time that the right is actually taking back ground that the left had previously claimed.
Is a man who has a name like a supervillain, Vox Day. Vox Day is the creator of Alt Hero.
Anything the left tells us is off limits. We're going to be going for that, and we're going to go for it hard.
The characters in his comics have secret identities. So does he, sort of. His birth name is...
Theodore Beale, and he's from Minnesota.
That's Amanda Robb. Amanda is a reporter with the nonprofit newsroom, The Investigative Fund. She's writing a story on alt-right comics for Rolling Stone magazine. She interviewed Vox Day for this story.
And even though he's an American white nationalist, he lives in Europe. And he is what you would call an influencer or even a thought leader of the alt-right.
What else do you know about Vox Day besides that he's writing and publishing Alt Hero?
He runs an independent publishing house that puts out books by other extreme conservatives. He's a prolific blogger. He wrote an influential manifesto on the alt-right. By his early 30s, he was calling himself Vox Dei, which means the voice of God, roughly. But sometimes he also calls himself the Supreme Dark Lord.
So he calls himself the Supreme Dark Lord. And then he wonders why people make him out to be evil.
Yeah, it's hard to understand.
Okay, so when did the alt-hero comic book get started?
Well, Vox launched a crowdfunding campaign after the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville. That was in August 2017, and he started crowdfunding in September. If you remember, the Unite the Right rally was when neo-Nazis and the KKK and other groups took to the streets in Charlottesville, and they were shouting things like, Jews will not replace us, and waving around Confederate flags.
And Confederate flags seem to be a thing for Vox Dei. I'm on his crowdfunding page, and there's a superhero named Rebel. She's a curvy redhead squeezed into a skimpy costume that's got the design of a Confederate flag. She also waves one around.
As you can see, we're not afraid to fly the Confederate flag, despite the fact that the left has come out so hard against it.
This is from a May 2018 interview with Vox Dei on InfoWars. That's the far-right website and radio show that's so extreme. Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube banned it. In this interview, Vox Dei is talking to InfoWars host Alex Jones.
I realize that this is information warfare, and comics are paramount right now because they're archetypal, and it's something the enemy completely controls. I like the Marilyn Monroe-shaped redhead. Who is she?
That's Dina Meek, and she's the newest recruit to the Global Justice Initiative.
He's talking about the cover of Alt Hero.
Well, I got to tell you, it's awesome because notice she doesn't look like a heroin head. She hasn't been drinking soy. She looks like a woman.
Yeah, it's actually a lot of fun to go in and violate pretty much all of the SJW imperatives.
When Vox Dei says SJW, that's short for Social Justice Warriors, which, you know, sounds good, right? Because fighting for justice is a good thing. But apparently it's not. It's a diss that's become a buzzword for the alt-right.
You know, they're chopping the hair off women. They're making all the women fat.
Because they either want fat and look like a man or like an emaciated little boy, not the goddess, you know, look.
Oh, exactly. And that's intentional. You know, if you look at what they're doing, they keep introducing more and more gay characters, more and more transgender characters, and this is very, very intentional.
Vox Dei is trying to make the argument that social justice warriors are on a mission to ruin comics with a leftist feminist diversity agenda. The marketing of Alt Hero is all about stoking those fears. Remember, this is the first comic Vox Dei has ever written.
The comics industry is not merely in decline, but is rapidly approaching a state of complete collapse.
So you actually met with Vox Dei and interviewed him. What was it like?
So I got in touch with him, and at first he said no. He doesn't, you know, talk to the mainstream media because we're all fake news and we lie. But then he rethought. He finally agreed to meet me. So I said, great, you know, where are you? And he was like, I'm not telling you. I'm like, all right, well, come to your office in Finland. He's like, no, you can't come there. So I'm like, okay, so where can we meet? And he picked the Geneva airport.
Geneva, Switzerland?
Yeah, I was in Europe for a different story, so I went to meet him.
What happened?
I went to a restaurant in the airport, and I look around, and there's a white guy in a gray T-shirt, and he has thinning hair. Just a regular-looking white guy like I went to high school with. And then we ordered, like, the world's most expensive hamburgers. And I want to say we talked for 3 hours, but really I listened to him for 3 hours.
Vox's first law, mm-hmm. Any sufficiently advanced intelligence is indistinguishable from insanity.
And what's that a play on?
Arthur C. Clarke's first law of science and magic.
Which is?
Any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic.
Okay. And what does it mean? He was the hardest interview I've ever done and the worst interview I've ever done. It was Austrian philosophers and war theory and you know, genetic information, and it was all tangled and knotted.
Do you, like, not think women should vote?
I think it depends. In a representative democracy, no.
Me? I'm so smart.
I've lived for years in a place where I couldn't vote, so I don't quite understand what the issue is.
Not because of your gender, because you're not a citizen.
Yeah. But I mean, the main...
So after you met him that one time and had expensive hamburgers, did you talk to him again?
Yeah, we've talked on the phone, we've talked by Skype. He was actually very, you know, nice to me and forthcoming in his own very intellectual, convoluted way until he got mad at me.
Why'd he get mad at you? Because you wanted to vote, or... So Vox Day claims to have gotten money to produce these comic books through a crowdfunding website. I'm on that site, and it says he started off trying to raise $25,000, but he raised close to $236,000. That just amazes me.
It's actually pretty unbelievable.
Where is that money coming from?
Well, that's the $236,000 question. It's very hard to tell. Most of it's from anonymous donors, and a lot of it comes in very large increments, some up to $5,000 each, which is weird because the average donation to a crowdfunding project is about $66.
But we don't know if he actually raised that money. It looks like it, but we don't know that for a fact.
I think that's a really good point, because Alt Hero was raising money on a crowdfunding site called Freestarter, and apparently Vox Day helped create it. It's a private site. It's totally a black box. There's no way to find out who made most of the donations, where the money came from, where it went, if it actually existed. I did find out that the company that processed the credit card payments decided to stop working with Freestarter a few months back. And I tried to get in touch with the company to find out why, and they wouldn't talk to me. But All Hero had already way surpassed its fundraising goal, and it's publishing now a series of comic books.
So who's distributing Alt Hero?
Amazon.
Why is Amazon distributing this book?
Well, I asked Amazon, and someone from their PR department got back to me. He said it falls within their guidelines. He helpfully sent me a link to their guidelines, so I clicked on them, and it says their definition of offensive material is, and I'm quoting, "what we deem offensive is probably about what you would expect," end quote.
That doesn't make sense because I find this offensive, and they don't find it offensive.
Well, it's a very movable goalpost, it turns out. Amazon changes what it thinks is offensive all the time.
I don't know. That rule seems pretty flimsy.
Not only is Amazon distributing the digital version, it's number one in its category on Amazon.
So how does this book become a bestseller?
Well, it's possible that a lot of people are really reading it. And it's possible that Vox is taking advantage of something that Amazon does, which is called micro-categorizing. So right now, one of the issues of Alt Hero is the number one new release in superhero graphic novels. That's a pretty small category, but it is number one in that category.
I mean, is there a way to game the system?
Sure, there's a way to game the system. You have your fans and followers... You know, click on the book. If you have Kindle Unlimited, it's free.
So why would he do this?
Well, it's called astroturfing. And what that means is to make something that's a fake grassroots campaign. And what it does is it makes somebody seem more popular, more powerful, more successful than they are. And sometimes fake success can lead to real success.
So what is real success? The ideas being fought over in the streets of Charlottesville are now being fought in the pages of comic books. Because what better way to normalize their ideas than something as innocent as a comic book?
So talk to me about Alt Hero.
This is from a Skype call that Amanda and Vox had before he ghosted us.
Well, a lot of people came up that had been telling me that they wanted me to get into comics.
Okay.
And I had written the dialogue for...
He says he just felt there was a crying need for this, that the superhero universe had become diverse for diversity's sake. They weren't heroic anymore.
It was more because of what was happening with Marvel. They were starting to introduce their heavily SJW characters, their female Thor, their, you know, fat Samoan G.I. Joe soldier, all these ridiculous characters that nobody likes.
But he thought, okay, you know, I'll give it a whirl and see if there's an audience out for that. And he did a fundraising campaign, crowdfunding.
Then what happened was a guy named Chuck Dixon backed the project.
Chuck Dixon. Chuck Dixon is one of my all-time favorite comic book writers.
All these people got excited because they're like, oh, Chuck Dixon is backing it.
Uh-huh.
I called him up to thank him for backing it. And he said, yeah, no problem. He's happy to do so. And I said, well, you know, I hear that you're not writing much for Marvel or DC anymore. Do you want to work with us? And he said, sure. So I actually turned over an entire line to him. Basically, he's creating our Gotham.
Chuck and I have something in common. Last fall, I published my first story with DC Comics. I got to write Nightwing, Batman's former sidekick, which is one of the characters Chuck Dixon wrote all those years ago. Now, in my opinion, he didn't just write Nightwing. He defined him. And now, this legend in the comics community is writing in the alt-hero universe. When we come back, I meet up with Chuck Dixon in the comic book shop and ask him why. Because with great power, well, you know the rest. That's coming up on Reveal.
This podcast is supported by Americans United for Separation of Church and State. Americans United defends your freedom to live as yourself and believe as you choose, so long as you don't harm others. Core freedoms like abortion rights, marriage equality, public education, and even democracy itself rest upon the wall of separation between church and state. A network of anti-democratic groups are attacking these freedoms, seeking to force us all to live by their narrow beliefs. Americans United is fighting back. Freedom without favor and equality without exception. Learn more about AU's work at au.org/MJ.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Ledson.
We are at Yancey Street Comics in Port Richey, Florida. And this is just an awesome shop, as you can see.
Yancey Street Comics is an old-school comic shop in a strip mall. It looks exactly like the image that pops up in your head. Spacious, with rows and rows and rows of comic books and toys. I fell in love with this place the minute I walked in. I was there a few months ago to meet with the man who was once my comic book idol, Chuck Dixon.
How long have you been writing comics?
Over 30 years.
Chuck has metal-framed glasses, and these days his goatee is a little more white than gray. Back in the day, Chuck wrote a bunch of comic classics that I grew up on. The Fantastic Four, The Punisher, Batman. Chuck also wrote for a lesser-known comic book startup called CrossGen.
I remember CrossGen. I had several of their titles. They had the sigil, right? They had
the
yin and yang sigil.
Yeah.
And to be quite honest, like I probably started buying CrossGen because your name was on it. If your name is on the book, I'm going to pick it up.
Well, I appreciate that.
He tells me that over the years, his personal politics haven't always lined up with what he's assigned to write in the comics.
I've written impassioned anti-gun speeches for Batman. I mean, I've laid out in reasonable, passionate terms why Batman doesn't like guns and why they're bad. You know, and I don't believe anything of what I put in his mouth, but I wrote it.
Chuck's a supporter of gun rights. He's described himself as a Genghis Khan far-right conservative. He says he hasn't worked for Marvel Comics since 2002. That's when Marvel brought back an Old West cowboy character named Rawhide Kid.
The Rawhide Kid. And they brought the Rawhide Kid back as gay. I said a few things online, like, why don't you create a new character who's gay? They wrote Rawhide Kid as a sissy, and that was the joke of the series. And I'm like, how is this a pro-gay comic book? How are you presenting this guy as a gay hero in any kind of serious attempt, you know, at what you think you're trying to do?
If you're a gay kid and you like comic books and you've never seen yourself represented in comics, I don't know. I just feel like, shouldn't they be able to come into a comic shop and see themselves?
I don't have a problem with it as long as you create a new character.
Right. But creating, you and I both know like how hard it is to like launch a new character.
See, that's the problem. That's where the agenda, putting the agenda, you know, and I'm not saying you have an agenda. There's nothing wrong with you wanting to see a character that you can relate to more closely. But when you put the agenda before the story, that's where the problem lies. Because then you come up with uninteresting characters for the sake of diversity.
Then I asked the question that brought me all the way down to Florida. Why work with Vox Day?
Well, he approached me. I didn't know much about him. I still don't know a whole lot about him. But, I mean, this is the first time in my experience that I've gone to work on a job and everybody's concerned with who's publishing it and their background and their beliefs and everything else. Because this guy is like, man, is this guy a lightning rod? And I don't agree with a whole lot of what he says, but he was offering me an opportunity to do creator-owned work. And he had a funding thing and he had a distribution deal set up. And he admitted that he didn't know what he didn't know, you know, so he wasn't telling me what to do. He was asking me what I should do or what would be best for me and all the rest of it. Offered me an opportunity and didn't tell me what to write and still has not told me what to write. So to me, it was just an opportunity to be free of the kind of constraints that are put on you at the major companies, the political correctness constraints. I wasn't interested in doing a book that was political. I wasn't interested in doing a message book.
So he's not asking you to write anything political, but you understand how, like, just working with him is political.
You know, I've read the alt-hero thing, and I've rejected parts of it I didn't want to do, you know, that I don't agree with, and I don't write to that.
I understand that, like, you know, it's an opportunity to write and to do all of this other stuff, but what it means for me is that you are lending him your credibility.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how much credibility I lend him. Seriously.
Earlier, I told you that I started reading CrossGen.
Right.
Because your name was on it. But the only reason why I went with them is because you, in essence, gave it its credibility for me.
You know, it's...
And to other people who may not know what Vox Day is about, who may be just on the outside of all of this, they see a comic book in the store and it's got Chuck Dixon's name on it. And they pick it up.
Right.
And then they see, like, oh, this is in that universe. And then they pick up Vox Day stuff. Like, you are giving him credibility.
Yeah, I don't even know how to deal with that.
Yeah.
Because I don't believe that I lend that much credibility to anybody. Certainly, the majority of the people in this industry who do hiring, the gatekeepers, don't see me.
Yeah, but those are different people.
I mean, all my work is for outsiders. Right. I'm doing a lot of work for guys that I'd never heard of 6 months ago, and now I'm working for them.
Can you understand, like, how you writing for them feels like to the people that grew up reading your books who are Black, who are Jewish, who, you know.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I can see your point of view on it. And I don't really have a ready answer for you. I don't have a pat answer for you. It's, you know, I'm doing my work from my point of view, and it doesn't really share everything.
A few weeks after I talked to Chuck in Florida, the first issue of Alt Hero launched, and Vox Day is definitely using Chuck's name to promote the project.
We've got the best writer in comics who's doing a separate series for us called Avalon. His name's Chuck Dixon. He's the man, and it's only going to get better from here.
Amanda Robb of the Investigative Fund is here to tell us what happened since Alt Hero launched back in the spring. So, Amanda, what are Chuck Dixon and Vox Day up to now?
Well, they're still working on Alt Hero. They're on their fourth issue right now. And they're both crowdfunding for new comic books on Indiegogo. Box's comic, which Chuck is writing with him, is another Alt Hero. It's about QAnon. Q is sort of the conspiracy theory about pedophile Democrats and Trump's secret plans to defeat the globalist. They raised $62,000 in the first week.
$62,000. Is this a profitable venture for them?
Well, there's no paper trail, so it's really hard to know how much profit there is.
So obviously, Alt Hero is an independent project on the fringes. Is there anything else out there like it?
Oh, yeah. It's a burgeoning genre. Alt Hero is just one of a handful of crowdfunded far-right comic books that have cropped up recently.
Wow. Thanks, Amanda.
Thank you, Al.
That was Amanda Robb, a reporter with the Investigative Fund. They're our partners on this story. The alt-right already has radio shows, rallies, and literature. Why dip into the world of comic books? Well, if you think about it, it makes sense. Because there's a dark corner of fandom that's a fertile recruiting ground for the alt-right. It's made up of a small but vocal group of toxic fans who are angry that comic books have been changing to become more diverse for writers, artists, and the superheroes they create. They're fixated on keeping women, people of color, and the LGBTQ community out of comics. And when something happens they don't like, they go on the attack.
My phone started buzzing, and people I knew from all over the country were suddenly like, I'm seeing all these threats to you on Twitter, and then there's this big story. It was incredibly intense.
That's Chelsea Kane. She wrote a comic book series for the Marvel character Mockingbird. And as a woman writing a female superhero, Chelsea took a lot of flack. So much so, it became a media spectacle back in 2016. I loved this book. I've got a Mockingbird poster on my wall. I have a lot of superhero posters around my house. What? I'm a nerd. In this one, Mockingbird is wearing a standard issue superhero utility belt and a t-shirt that says, "Ask me about my feminist agenda." What issue was it where Mockingbird has the t-shirt that said, "Ask me about my feminist agenda"?
That was number 8. That was our last issue. And we knew it was going to be our last issue. And that is why I put her in that shirt.
Is that when, like, the real heavy stuff started happening, or was it happening all along?
It was a week after that cover came out. I had this sort of unusual number of just people on Twitter who seemed to kind of want to weigh in about how, like, feminists shouldn't write comics. Like, literally, like, people would tweet that. So my daughter, Eliza, my 13-year-old, 12 at the time, daughter Eliza, and my husband, Mark, we're waiting to watch an episode of Buffy.
She, of course, is talking about one of the greatest TV shows ever, Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Buffy! Buffy!
No! We'd gotten back from dinner, and then I had gotten kind of hijacked into responding to all of this sort of like Twitter stuff that was happening. It was like 12 people or whatever, like, but it was enough that I was needing to sort of address it. They were saying really stupid things, and I was just kind of done, and I really wanted to watch Buffy, and I kind of, in a moment of clarity, posted, you know, Twitter, this is misogynist. I am going to start blocking people who post misogynist comments on my Twitter feed. And it was that tweet that really started the blowback. I went and watched Buffy. We had a great time. It was a very good episode. We went to bed. The next morning, I waited a couple hours to kind of check my Twitter feed because I'm not crazy. And when I did, it was just kind of like, it was just blowing up. Like, it was scrolling by, you know, like when you're reading a Word document and you accidentally click on the sidebar and suddenly it starts to scroll. It was like that. That's how fast the tweets were coming in. And I didn't even know what had really happened. Like, I saw the first several and I realized that there was a lot of people who were angry at me for threatening to limit their free speech, I guess, because they have a First Amendment right to post misogynist comments on my Twitter feed and for me to read them. And that had been apparently picked up and put in some other spaces, other, you know, like I saw one tweet that had like 250,000 followers or Twitter account. And that account started directing people at me. And again, it was more about, if I call myself a feminist, then I need to take it like a man. That it was unfair to leave Twitter or to block people just for sharing their opinion about the fact that I didn't have a right to write comics. I saw that. I had a couple thousand fewer followers. Like, the whole thing's like something clearly had happened in, you know, the 14 hours I had been away from my computer. You know, this is, I'm done. And I deleted my account and I walked the dogs. I had a TV crew on my porch the next morning. You know, BBC and CNN and, like, you know, all these huge media companies were trying to get in touch to get my statement. We're trying to get my side of the story. I'm against misogyny. That's my side. And I just was like, I'm just not going to feed it because I was terrified at that point.
How did your fans and people who were rallying around you, how did they respond?
So the hashtag I Stand With Chelsea Kane started trending on Twitter and Facebook within a couple of hours of when I left Twitter. And I started, you know, like, I got so many messages from, like, you know, real icons of the comics world reaching out personally to me in support. And I felt like this is great and it has nothing to do with me in the best way, right? This is about women in comics. And it's about misogyny on Twitter. And it's about, you know, how we talk to one another and about one another. I went to my social networking pages really expecting to see a lot of hate. And, you know, instead I had all of these messages, like, you know, hundreds and hundreds of messages from strangers on Facebook who had found me and wanted to reach out and to say that, you know, we're not all like that and we're sorry that that happened to you. And it reminded me so much of, like, why I wanted to be part of this community in the first place, right? Because those are the people that I write comics for.
We reached out to a lot of women in comics around this story. And nobody really wanted to talk to us. And I think mostly because they were scared to kind of get the trolls riled up again. And I'm wondering if you had any thoughts about that.
Yeah, I'm scared too. And that's why I'm here, right? That's why I'm talking to you, because it scares me. And that is how you give them power, right? Comics, you know, it is a unique industry because it is also an industry, like, made of freelancers. And that puts creators of all stripes in a really tense position where you don't want to make waves. You don't want to piss off your editor and you don't want the publisher to think that you are, you know, too loud or that you're going to distract from the project or even draw attention to yourself at all sometimes. I think that pressure of the next project and placing the next project and how vulnerable everybody is to just being shut out of the process because there are 3,000 other people who would love your job. I think it's a lot easier to be quiet and to kind of go along with it.
I think a lot of them also were scared, though, that the trolls would come after them.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think what you're identifying is sort of like the institutional fear, right, of losing work.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of them were really just petrified that they were going to have to deal with these trolls. I'm just curious, like, are you scared of them as well? Or is it...
No, and I should be clear, like, that's what I'm scared of. Like, I think it's important to talk about the larger kind of, like, freelancer issue because I think it plays into that. But yeah, for sure, that is absolutely the thing that I am scared of. And I am scared of that every time I post anything, every time I talk publicly about this. It is something I have not spoken publicly about very often. I turned all of the interviews requests down. So, like, I totally get that because they will take you down. You know, like, they are the eye of Sauron. And when it lands on you, there is nothing but fire and rage and wrath. They absolutely have the ability to make your life a living hell. And, you know, we can't like live in that tyranny.
Do you feel like Marvel did enough to help you battle these online trolls during the Mockingbird incident?
No, I think they were really nice to me, personally, a few of them. And I know that they have the best of intentions, but did they fail me totally? Yeah. Axel, the editor-in-chief, reached out in an email just to say that he was sorry that this was happening, that he had just heard about it, and that Marvel, in his opinion, can't police the internet, which is fair. He also said that if I were to receive death threats, that he would put the Marvel security team on that, which I like the idea that it was a security team, like some kind of Mossad elite task force. And in fact, I think it's just a lawyer sitting in a cube sending cease and desist letters. But still, I at the time had left Twitter. I was not about to go on and read all of the death threats that I was getting. I would have loved if they had had that elite Mossad team maybe just search the hashtag and maybe just proactively send a couple of cease and desist letters. That would have been great. And that could have been done in a way that they could have direct messaged people so it wasn't inflaming what was going on, but might have at least demonstrated a response to some of the real bad actors.
What do you think these comic book companies can do to help creators who are being, you know, attacked by these trolls, both online? Some people are getting doxxed. There's a lot of really horrible things that people are saying to each other. So what can these big companies do to stop that?
I think having some policies in place that are communicated to freelancers, that communicate how to be online, and some strategies in terms of privacy settings and engaging with public. I think Marvel should share a banned list that, you know, should be shared to all of their freelancers. I think that if these companies supported more voices in their stories, that some of this would be moot.
After Mockingbird, Chelsea started working with Marvel on another miniseries. She'd been writing it for the past 2 years, but right around the time when we did this interview, Marvel canceled it. The series was never published. Chelsea told us the cancellation didn't have anything to do with the trolls, but the decision upset her, and she's been vocal about it.
I am certain that they will never ask me to work for them again. They were very clear that we should keep this clean and quiet, and if we could do that, that they had lots of ideas for future projects. And I have not kept this clean, and I have not kept it quiet.
So with all that being said, why didn't you just keep quiet?
Do you like the silence that I met that question with? Why didn't I just keep quiet? I was outraged, like, not at the comic being killed, but at being asked to be quiet, because maybe it is the moment in time where we find ourselves in history, but I feel like we shouldn't ask people for their silence.
That was best-selling author Chelsea Kane. She may not be writing for Marvel anymore, but she does have a new comic series with Image Comics. It's called Maneaters. Here's how Chelsea described it.
The Handmaid's Tale meets Cat People, and it's about teenage girls who turn into killer wildcats when they have their periods, just like in real life.
Seems like Chelsea has decided to stand up to the trolls. Their claim is that diversity is ruining comic books, but that's not how Marvel Comics sees it. Next, we go inside the mothership. This is Reveal. From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. I've been in the comic book since I was a kid, and I have this vivid memory of going into my local comic shop and arguing with people about my favorite books. And I'm not going to lie, sometimes it got heated on both sides because, well, we were passionate about it. So it doesn't surprise me that people are arguing over comics online. What does surprise me is the vitriol.
So today's video is going to be about Captain Marvel and how I hate her.
All that anger has been rolled up into a hashtag, ComicsGate.
She a woman somewhere at some point in a lab coat in every one of their books.
But this isn't just about comics, who gets to tell stories and who doesn't. It's also about money. One of the leaders behind Comicsgate has over 80,000 YouTube followers, and he's raised nearly $400,000 for a graphic novel. This is war profiteering in the culture war. And fighting these battles has elevated him from an angry fanboy to a paid provocateur.
But I will say it's a shame.
And these ideologues will not rest until that character is either gay, transracial, or somehow identifies as something other than a straight white male.
If you've never been a target of a trolling campaign, it may be hard to understand how it feels. It starts with one tweet or a comment. And even if you don't know these people, you feel it. Then others join in. And you get this steady stream of hate. Your phone buzzes or chirps every few minutes. They misrepresent your work, your life, the things you love. And it feels like the whole world is joining in. And then come the threats. It's a cloud that can wrap itself around you, and you feel like there's no way out. For some of the women targeted by Comicsgate, it got so bad, they wouldn't go on the record with us. One woman told me she received death threats and rape threats. She was worried about even talking about it, that it could lead to a whole new cycle of harassment. So what's the comic industry doing to stand up to this hate? To find out, I met this woman.
Sana Amanat, and I'm VP of Content and Character Development at Marvel.
We sat down together at Marvel headquarters in New York City. Sana has also been a target for haters. Before she was a VP at Marvel, she co-created Ms. Marvel, not the blonde-haired Captain Marvel who's getting her own movie, but an American Muslim superhero by the name of Kamala Khan.
She came really out of conversations about my childhood and the idea that we needed a character for the young Sanas of the world, as my old boss Stephen Wacker said. But the bigger idea was about creating a character who was, yes, Muslim, yes, South Asian, yes, of course, a girl, woman, or teenager, but really someone who was relatable and that any fan would fall in love with.
I was surprised at how well the book did.
Us too, trust me.
Yeah, tell me about that. How did it happen?
When we first announced Ms. Marvel, huge flurry of press came about it. It was the top trending topic on the internet. And people, I think, actually showed up. They showed up in comic shops. They understood what it meant for this to be successful. Not only to have this kind of hero out there, but specifically to have Marvel carrying this character within their entire pantheon of superheroes.
Marvel also launched a female Thor, a Korean-American Hulk, and a Black Captain America.
That's what's really exciting about telling different kinds of stories is about the fact that you can go and decide one day that someone else is going to be Captain America. What does that look like? What does that ideal of Captain America represent? And what happens when you take someone else, like an African-American man, and give him that mantle?
What have been some of the challenges with evolving the line?
I think the only real challenge is just making sure that people are open to our newer characters.
I'm curious as to why do you think there aren't more women and headliners of color that are prominent from in this 80-year history? Like, we're just now starting to introduce these characters.
You're talking about the 40s and 50s and 60s where white men controlled everything. And so the natural predilection for men creating everything is creating content for themselves. And so the focus was specifically on a lot of white male heroes. I think after the movies came out in the last 10 years, and I want to give credit to the studios, it's become this really big global mainstream phenomenon. People always knew who Peter Parker was. People always knew, the cartoons existed. So Marvel was really, at the back of people's minds. But the movies allowed the Marvel brand and the Marvel roster of characters to literally go global. And because of that, because audiences were opened up, we were able to interact with them in a bigger way and take more risks. And also at the same time, while we're creating all of these sort of newer characters or experimenting with sort of the wider female roster of heroes that we've been able to do in the last 10 years, we knew that more people were waking up to seeing themselves in our comics, and also realizing, oh, wait, if that's for me, too, if I can see myself in a comic, maybe I can actually be a part of the creative process.
I met with Sana a few days before writer Chelsea Kane went public criticizing Marvel, claiming the company didn't have her back when she was attacked online. So I couldn't ask Sana directly about those claims, but I did ask her this. When we bring up these great names of women working at Marvel Comics and doing all this great work,
yeah.
You know, you gotta like reflect on the trolls that are trying to pull them down. And there's a lot. I mean, they have a hashtag, right? Comicsgate.
Sure.
And so they're attacking that. I think that like some of the critiques that I've heard from creators say that Marvel kind of stays on the sideline of this instead of like engaging and actually taking these people on.
So the way that I look at it is I am a Muslim American woman who is a vice president at one of the biggest entertainment companies in the world and have been able to make a lot of big strides. That's how I take them on, because I'm here and they're there and they can be as upset as they want. But we're not trying to take away anything from them.
I'm speaking specifically, though, about more about the victims than them. And if they're working for Marvel or for one of the big two, and those companies are kind of silent on the treatment that they're getting, they feel kind of left out to sea with nobody to help them.
Well, I don't know if that's true, because a lot of the way that we deal with that kind of those kinds of situation, and I'm not HR, is specifically internal. Like, I have had conversations with the women who've, you know, been victims of this. I'm a victim of it. I've been dealing with it since I joined Marvel. I think it's really more about making sure that we create a safe space for them to be able to feel like they can talk about the issues that they have. We're not trying to further their sort of public face on this, because I think it's important that they have privacy and that their name isn't smeared and continue to be smeared. Because the more that we repeat it, the more that people will pay more attention and have a bigger target on their backs. And we want to make sure that they're safe.
It's one of the things that I've learned in working on this story is that it's difficult to get a lot of women creators on record because they don't want the harassment to start again.
So in terms of how the industry responded, we knew that the best way for Marvel to respond to something like this was having the legacy of Marvel, Stan Lee, actually say something, and he did.
Hi, heroes. This is Stan Lee coming at you. Want you to know, Marvel has always been and always will be a reflection of the world right outside our window.
If you don't know who Stan Lee is, well, he's an icon, a co-creator of many of the superheroes you know and love. He also has a cameo in every Marvel movie.
His soapboxes, his letters columns were all about the concept of equality and being good to one another and caring for one another and the importance of these values and inserting those in our heroes.
That world may change and evolve, but the one thing that will never change is the way we tell our stories of heroism. Those stories have room for everyone, regardless of their race, gender, religion, or color of their skin.
He realized the importance of responding to it, and we had a really great video of him trying to encourage our fans to be positive and to stop saying hateful things.
The only things we don't have room for are hatred, intolerance, and bigotry.
Now social media has given everybody a voice.
Yes.
Is that where we are? I mean, do we just have to, like, keep riding these tides?
I don't have the answer to that. I think it's too big of a question to say, how do we deal with anonymous hate? You know, that's a question, I think, for the times. And I think social media has shed a very strange light on it because, yes, you have handles and you have little pictures of people, but you don't know who they actually are. And it's a little scary. Like, I'm at a point now where I'm like, oh, what's going to be sent in the mail to me? Like, who knows who's going to be coming at me at a comics convention? And we have to be very, very mindful of that.
critics of the diversification of the line would say that Marvel financially took a hit when it started diversifying.
I say rats to that. That's not true at all. It's like the 50s version of cursing, right? So right. That's okay. Rats to that. No, I don't think that's true at all. I think that, yes, some books succeed, some books fail. And if that happens, it has nothing to do with the fact that it's a brown character. It has to do with the fact that we have to make sure that, you know, one, our audiences get excited about the stories. And we know that these characters can have a further impact because we are telling our audiences, our readers, that, look, there is every kind of hero out there. You are reflected in our pantheon of heroes.
That's Sana Amananth, Vice President of Content and Character Development at Marvel. She also told me the company hasn't let up with expanding their superhero universe with new characters that reflect the diversity of America. We also reached out to DC Comics, but they declined to talk to us for this show. In the years I've been working as a journalist, I have never encountered a story like this, where so many people refuse to talk on record because they're scared that it would just stir the trolls up and harassment would start all over. Their reaction tells me everything about the world we live in today. We are swift to anger and slow to listen. And when that rage is focused in the wrong direction, people get hurt. I think it's a beautiful thing to be passionate about a character or story, and it's totally appropriate to disagree with a writer or artist's take. That's one thing. But when you attack a person because of who they are, you're no fan. You're a troll. No one should be scared for doing their job. The companies that publish the books, the platforms that promote them, and the fans who love them have to learn to wield the power they hold the same way as the heroes in their favorite books. Thanks again to the Investigative Fund, our partner on today's show. Keep an eye out for an upcoming article on alt-right comics in Rolling Stone magazine by Amanda Robb. Never Meet Your Superheroes was produced by Michael Schiller and Fernanda Camarena. The show was edited by executive producer Kevin Sullivan. Our production manager is Muende Inahosa. Original score, sound design, and engineering was from the dynamic duo, Jay Breezy, Mr. Jim Briggs, and Fernando, my man, Yo Aruda. They had help from Catherine Raimondo and Vanessa Lowe. Krista Scharfenberg is our CEO. Taki Telenidis is our senior supervising editor. Aaron Sankin provided additional reporting. Thanks to the rest of our super friends, editor Esther Kaplan and researcher Jaime Longoria of the Investigative Fund. Our theme music is by Camarado Lightning. Support for Reveal is provided by the Reva and David Logan Foundation, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the Jonathan Logan Family Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the Heising Simons Foundation, and the Ethics and Excellence in Journalism Foundation. Reveal is a co-production of the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. I'm Al Ledson, and remember, there is always more to the story.
Support for Reveal comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software, or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/reveal. That's odoo.com/reveal. Odoo, modern management made simple.